U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are. Welcome to Friday afternoon on the Wintrust Business Lunch from the Allstate Skyline Studio. I'm Steve Bertrand. Thanks very much for tuning in on this first Friday of November, I should say, with a really happy jobs report that came out earlier. Steve Alexander will be talking about that throughout the program. So what happens if people think your business is closing and it's really not? Apparently that happened out in Romeoville. White Fence Farms. White Fence Farms was a very familiar name on WGN Radio for years and years back in the 80s and 90s. And they've got a very successful fried chicken restaurant there. And then they ran into a bit of a problem because of another White Fence Farms, and the city got involved. We'll talk to the woman who runs White Fence Farms a little bit later in the program. Laura Hastert will be along. But we start on Fridays with Andrea Haynes, who is the editor of Blue Sky Innovation in the Chicago Tribune, writes about the tech world and startups in Chicago. Welcome back, Andrea.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, I love this story about the Sleep Sherpa. Now, Sleep Sherpa is a phrase I've heard before. I don't know exactly why. I know they're around. But they're opening up a showroom in Chicago where you can try out beds that aren't it's like a showcase of beds you might otherwise get by mail, right?
It is. So, you know, the idea of buying a mattress online has become more and more popular. There's kind of a burgeoning number of brands that will sell you a mattress through the mail.
And they're all paranormal. There's Ghost. There's Casper. I have a ghost bed. Sharon and I bought a ghost bed a few years ago.
Happy with it?
Love it.
Yeah.
But you did it kind of blind because it just, you hope for the best and you order it and then a box shows up in the mail with a mattress inside.
Yeah, it's a whole new way of buying them. But of course, some people still want to flop on it, give it a try in the store, try it out in a showroom before they order it. So this Sleep Sherpa is kind of curating samples from these online companies and allowing you to try them out soon in Chicago.
So the Sleep Sherpa is a guy who writes bed reviews. Is that how this got started?
Yeah, there's kind of a strange history here. Like, this guy got onto this whole idea of, you know, helping people buy the online mattresses and was doing reviews online. But then he wound up in a lawsuit with Casper, which is one of the big early providers of this type of mattress. They wound up suing him, saying that the brand's favored, you know, basically they were kickbacks for good reviews.
So I'm reading this article and I'm thinking, okay, this guy's writing reviews of beds. How's he making money? And he would get commissions from people who bought through his site, maybe? And then the allegation, and this lawsuit was settled, so we don't know, but the allegation was that he was kind of maybe selling good reviews.
Exactly. So that was kind of the drama around this a couple years ago. He's still around. The name Sleep Sherpa, which is, you know, a guide, basically, your guide to mattresses, is still around. And now, I guess, focusing on not so much telling you what he thinks you should buy, but giving you a chance to try it out.
So the idea is he would have 10 or 15 different beds in there. It looks like he's going to stock one brand, maybe. But you would try them out, and then you would order by mail from the company, but he probably would get a cut, just like anything else, if you tried it on there.
Exactly, for providing kind of the service that got you there.
And it is the way we're going to buy beds, don't you think?
It's funny, though. To me, we talk about this once in a while when you and I are together here about companies that are inventing things that we already had.
Right.
And to me, this is like we've basically invented the mattress store here. And Casper also, which has been, you know, again, the biggest name, probably online brand, is opening 200 retail stores. So it's like we're going basically circling right back to having mattress stores again.
Well, it's true. You pointed out off the air that you don't really go to the mattress firm and come home with the bed. You try it on and then they mail it to you or ship it to you. And so that's sort of the way, right? So are we really, this is so, it's not different at all.
It's getting a little meta. Right. And, you know, I was saying my consumer tip is you have to make sure that someone's going to take away your old mattress or you're left with another task.
So my daughter bought a bed, and I won't mention the name because I'm not positive of it. And they sent it to her house, a bed by mail, you know, and they show up in they come packed in boxes and you have to let it breathe for a couple of hours till it, you know, it's really kind of cool. But for one reason or another, she didn't like it. I don't know if it was the wrong size or maybe even a color issue. I don't know. But they had a money-back guarantee. And so she started to pursue the guarantee. And what they said is, well, we don't take back used beds, so you have to donate it to a charity. So then Emma had to arrange a third-party charity to come pick up her bed get the receipt before she could get a new bed, which is not convenient.
Yeah, that sounds like kind of a pain, doesn't it?
All right, so Sleep Sherpa, it's coming to... It's so funny. I was so excited about the story until you pointed out, right, we're just doing... All we're doing now is we're buying foam beds instead of...
But like you said, it'll come shrunken down into a box, and you have that cool experience of opening the shrunken down bed and letting it like actually puff into normalcy.
And then you can have everyone watch that, the big open on YouTube, but post that video.
Yep.
That's worth that. Okay, City Council voted this week to create... It's not a new office, or is it a new office to sort of protect people's wages?
It is. They would be creating a new office. It has basically three tasks, and that is enforcing the city's laws regarding minimum wage payments, allowing workers to get paid sick time, and keeping an eye on anti-wage theft laws, which go into things like overtime not being paid when it should be.
Now, we talked about that a lot maybe a year or so ago, where people were expected to come in and work and they weren't getting paid overtime. So this is an office now where workers could go and get some redress if they find that's the case.
Yeah, the issue of kind of classifying workers and whether their overtime counts, all that I know we talked about you know, quite a bit. And there are some other things happening in Chicago, like the minimum wage has been edging up. So keeping an eye on making sure those things are happening the way they're supposed to and giving people, especially lower wage workers, a place to go if things aren't happening.
Well, I think that's probably the point, because you could say, well, I'm supposed to get paid this amount, but if you're not... Where do you go?
Kind of what's your recourse?
Now it's a little clearer. This is where you should go.
Yep.
Give me 30 seconds on the fact there was that big Google walkout yesterday here in Chicago and elsewhere, even Dublin, all over the place. I mean, is that a sign of some widening changes, or is this going to be an isolated incident?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a sign of widening changes. I think it's part of, in the sort of even bigger sense, this idea of tech is finally kind of coming to terms with the ethics about some of what it does, and not just how, what are we doing, what can we do, but how should we be doing it? And this protest in Chicago that I know everyone's been talking about the last couple of days seems to me to be part of that.
Andrea Haina, so what's in Red Eye this weekend?
So Red Eye has a really cool story about nostalgia. Like why all these things are coming up in restaurants and other things we do that really focus on the flavors and experiences we loved as kids.
Check that out. Nice to see you again. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Steve.
It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Adam Ochstein is in the studio. He is the founder and CEO of Stradex. Is it Stadex or Stradex?
There's an R in there.
That's Stradex. That's what I thought. Okay. Yeah.
Now I'm not across the street anymore. You don't know how to pronounce our name.
Yeah, you used to just sort of stroll over like during the commercial break before you came on. Now it's a hike for
it
you.
Is.
It's like almost three blocks.
Sweating, yeah.
Nice to see you again.
Likewise.
Boy, the jobs report came out today.
250,000 new ones.
There's like three jobs for every human.
I know.
How's that impacting your business?
Greatly. Yeah. Directly, obviously, it's a tight job market, so you got to make sure it's a good work environment, good pay, all those other things. And then for our clients, you know, primarily hospitality sector, there's a war for talent, even for, you know, hospitality sector jobs. So
right.
People want a job that they want to work at because there's choices.
You provide human resources personnel services for the hospitality.
Yes, software and with a mixture of services wrapped around it.
And workplace environment is key to keeping workers, pay and workplace environment.
100%.
People are a little tense right now because we have an election in 4 or 5 days.
Is there an election in 4 or 5 days? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're calling it this time the midterm elections. And I would imagine that spills over into the workplace sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we're encouraging all of our employees to get out and vote. I actually am buying every employee a drink of their choice, non-alcoholic, if
right.
they can prove that they went out and voted on Tuesday or did an early vote.
So they could choose like the most expensive drink they could find?
Yeah, like the $10 cup of coffee at Starbucks.
So like if there's a coffee joint they love in Santa Fe, would you fly to Santa Fe?
I'll give them a gift card so they can fly to Santa Fe. How's that?
But I would imagine a lot of bosses, a lot of employers are dealing with conflict right now.
I mean, look what happened with Google yesterday with the walkout.
Right, right.
You know, marching up and down the street here. Now, granted, that was a union workforce with the hotel worker strikes. But, you know, my thing is you can't fake it, right? So your company's ethics, your morals, what you stand for, you can't fake that. So and employees, similar to people wanting to buy products, I know you talked about that yesterday, and
right.
they are that are aligned with their political views or beliefs. I think employees are also looking at, this is my brand. The company I work for, it was representative of who I am.
Right.
And I think that people want to work for a place that they feel is representative of what they stand for.
Well, that implies, I don't think you're saying this, but it implies that you're going to have a right-wing office or a left-wing office. No, I mean, well, I don't want to fit there. I mean, that can't be very good for the
employees. No, you want it to be inclusive, but I think what you want is an environment where people feel that you stand for something. You might not agree with what an organization, individuals stand for, but that your beliefs are, you know, represented in a professional way, that you're heard and seen, because some of these political stuff is really workplace things, like the Me Too. That's a political thing, but that all started in a workforce.
Well, can you stand for something and not be political, partisan?
Not in today's world.
Adam, that's a pretty big thing you're saying, though. I mean, you're not saying this particular ilk isn't welcome in my workplace, right?
I don't think I'm saying that at all, okay. But I think that people are going to be attracted to join your workplace and, more importantly, stay in a tight job market if they feel that the belief systems of that workplace are representative of what they stand for.
So I guess then my question is, can you have that situation, and maybe I just asked this, but can you have that without it being partisan, left or right? I mean, can you have, I would imagine you can have an office that fosters discussion and honesty and all of that, that doesn't exclude one part or another, or you tell me?
I think you can, but I think some of these issues, you know, transcend political divide. For instance, the environment, right? I think most people believe that the climate change.
Well, there you go. See?
Okay, I guess it is. It does kind of bleed over, but, you know, so what am I doing at work to help foster good environmental care, like a good custodian of the environment? Do we have a recycling bin? Is there opportunity for employees to do cleanup and things like that? Do you stand for things like that, or do you just bury your head in the sand and think that, you know, environmental issues aren't real?
Adam Ockstein, the founder and CEO of Stratex. We've got a recycling container. Take this one if you want, because I don't know if it ever gets emptied.
I don't think they do in Chicago.
It's nice to see you. Thanks very much, Domitee. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 1238 from the Allstate Skyline Studio. This is sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, you're wearing eyeglasses, maybe, or you know someone who does. Do you have any idea how they're made or where they're made? 90% of the eyeglasses sold in this country, by one count anyway, are made overseas, most of them in China. There's a company in Chicago that is hoping to change that. Scott Shapiro's in the studio, the co-founder of State Optical. Scott, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Okay, I don't know where to start with you because I've got so many questions. First of all, it never occurred to me how eyeglasses were made. I kind of assumed, you know, that they were spit out by some machine. Right? You're laughing
And that's so much a part of our vision, right? And no pun intended, but so not only it's possible that you've never thought about that. Most people who wear glasses probably have never thought about that. But what's worse, opticians and optometrists, people who work at retail locations that have devoted their lives to eyewear, most of them have also never really thought about it either. It's always been done in this like mysterious way, thousands of miles away from here.
Okay, so here you are. Your family was in eyeglass business.
I grew up in the eyewear business.
And then you find yourself, you've got a variety of partners in this, and you're back in it now. And so what you're selling are glasses that are made in not just the USA, but in Chicago. Is that part of the brand, or is that, I mean, why is it that you decided to do that?
So, first and foremost, just like you said, I mean, we wanted to start the conversation about what actually goes into making a pair of eyeglasses and, you know, maybe what some of the differences are between buying a high quality pair of glasses versus an inexpensive sort of commoditized pair of glasses. And I'll accept that there's a place in the market for both of those things. But we really wanted to tell story and show people what goes into making high quality frames.
Okay, is it acetate?
That's the material we use.
Is that what albums were made from?
I believe that at one point albums may have been made from acetate, but it's
at
not
one point there were albums, Scott.
Good point. But I don't think it's exactly the same type of acetate.
And so it's a petroleum product.
It's a cotton-based plastic. A very high quality plastic. And the reason we use acetate is because it can be heated and bent to fit your face perfectly.
How do you make it colors? How do you add the colors and the tones?
The colors come from the acetate that we purchase. So just like if you're designing a suit, you might use different fabrics from all over the world. And the fabrics, you don't necessarily design the fabric themselves.
Right.
Same do we do with acetate.
So sometimes when I'm really excited about a topic, I jump all over the place. So.
Okay, yeah, no problem. I'm right here.
Okay, so most of these glasses are made overseas. You started this company. You're going to be made in Chicago. Okay, we've established that you don't buy an eyeglass making machine.
Correct.
So then you have the situation where it's almost like you're bringing a new craft to the island, and you've got to bring the craftsman in.
Exactly. So we say in our factory it takes over 70 steps to make one pair of eyeglasses, and over 50% of that has to be done by hand. That's the type of thing that most people never really think about, and that's why it's so rare for it to be done here in the United States, because it does require so much hand labor. If you came to our factory today...
Which is where?
It's in Vernon Hills.
Vernon Hills, okay.
You would see, you would be blown away by how much handwork goes into making a beautiful pair of acetate frames.
It's like a jeweler, in a way?
Similar. Maybe I would say, yeah, the way that, because the real difficult part is the finishing of the frame.
Oh,
if you want it to have that luster and you want it to really pop in terms of the color coming out of it, there's no other way to do it than by hand.
And so you're selling, it's quality, but we're in sort of a craft culture right now, right? Craft beers, craft liquors, all of that. Is that part of your branding?
Yeah, we want people to start thinking about how their products are made. Not just where, that's important.
Yeah.
But, you know, what does it really take to make this thing? And I think when people start thinking about that, they start to attach to it differently. They treat it differently.
Scott, what are you thinking, though? I mean... Right?
It's been really difficult. let me make no bones about it. This is not all of my peers, and you know, my family has been in eyewear since 1977. All of my parents' friends and everyone else in the eyewear industry will tell you that I am totally insane. That this is bizarre. By the way, you said about 90% of frames come from overseas. It's more than that.
That's really just
the stuff that's labeled from overseas.
Okay, so branding then. It's made in the USA.
Correct.
But you're making a point of branding Chicago and Illinois, too. I said, before you came on a few minutes ago, I said, anyone can tell me why there are 21 holes drilled in the temple?
Yep.
No one would ever guess that.
Yeah, I know. It was because Illinois is the 21st state.
Wow.
And drilling those holes is just another example of the detail that goes into the frame. It's a lot of work. I joke that our head of production, Mark... He wishes that, you know, maybe we had built this factory in Massachusetts or in Pennsylvania. Right, You'd only have to drill a hole or two instead of 21.
And the glasses I was telling you off the air. I like the Wells.
Yes.
Sunglasses.
Thank you.
The different frames are named after, by and large, Chicago streets.
Every style is named after a street in Chicago. We're very proud of our Chicago roots.
Not like Narragansett, not the really big, long. No.
Hopefully we'll be around long enough that we have to get down the list to Narragansett.
And so then who are your clients? Are they listeners who are, because you can go online and buy sunglasses, but
Correct.
Prescription, you've got to go through an optometrist office.
Yeah, we partner exclusively with independent optical offices all around the country.
Right. And I looked at, I put my zip code in, and you got a lot.
Yeah, we've had a lot of success. There's, as you can imagine, when you're trying to fight to separate your brand from every other brand in the world, making it yourself and making it here locally has been very appealing to people so far.
Scott Shapiro is the co-founder of State Optical. Where do people find out more information?
They go to stateopticalco.com.
Are those Walgreens readers? What are you wearing right now?
No, of course not. This is the Wentworth. and by the way, if people want to tour the factory, they can.
Anyone is
invited to come and tour the factory. They can make an appointment right there at stateopticalco.com.
Nice to meet you. I wish you great success.
Steve, I hope to see you in Vernon Hills. Come on over.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. So many of us have skin in the game when it comes to real estate, either having bought homes or the values around us that are impacting our rent. And so you might have heard that Chicago is either really cheap compared to other places, but you might still be paying like $2,900 a month for a two-bedroom in Logan Square. So, some basics. A lot of the city's real estate is driven by what's going on downtown. So let's look there for perspective. A 384-bed student resident hall next to the Harold Washington Library sold recently for about $77 million. Albie Galoon at Cranes broke things down to show that that comes out to roughly $200,000 per bed. And developers think that's the price that's fair, yet they can still make money off of. So take a look at that and the other one bedrooms or two bedrooms around where you live, and you'll get a good idea as to where you fall in the real estate realm. And one last note before one of the most important weeks of the year, Tuesday is Election Day. Yes, sometimes it can feel like a burden, but that's what Ballotpedia.org and BallotReady.org
org are all about. Resources to help. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, let's go to Romeoville. On the phone line now is Laura Hastert. And, well, Laura, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hello, good morning.
This is, it's kind of a reunion. I don't know if you and I have ever met, but White Fence Farms and WGN Radio were partners for a long, long time back in the 80s and 90s when I was just getting started here, but that's just a blip for White Fence Farm. They've been in place for 64 years now, and I hear people are worried you're closing, Laura.
They were worried. There was rumor or a newscast out of Denver, Colorado, that a restaurant with our same name in Lakewood, Colorado, is going to close December 30th for good. Has nothing to do with us here in Illinois.
So it just, to me, is a story of the times, the way communication can go so quickly and go so quickly awry that even the village of Romeoville, this is how we got attention, learned about it, the village of Romeoville put out a press release saying that White Fence Farms is going to stay open. Were you hearing from people that they were afraid you were closing?
Yeah, we started getting calls nonstop on our phones. We have three or four different numbers that come into the main restaurant saying that we're closing. Say it isn't so. Oh my God, you can't. And I'm like, we're not. A week ago, Thursday, and then Romeoville put that out before I even talked to them.
Is that right?
Yeah.
But how did the people, how were they confused? I mean, were they seeing it on Facebook or what is it that, I mean, they're not watching Colorado television.
I don't know how the internet media works. Like, I can't explain.
No one does, Laura.
What goes out there. But, you know, on Facebook, one person picks it up and people, you know, they're related to a lot of people from Illinois go to Colorado and vice versa. And they'll say, White Fence Farm is closing, and they freak out and they don't finish reading.
And so everything is fine at White Fence.
It's clearly said in Colorado.
Yeah, which I think the press release said is 997 miles away. So not quite 1,000, but almost 1,000 miles away. That restaurant's going, yours is going to be fine.
Yes, we've been here 64 years. They are closing after 45, I think. And we are a main restaurant here in Romeoville, and our five carryout locations are going strong, and we hope to be here another 64 years. Well, we are trying hard every day. Not only are we staying open, we are hiring.
Tell me about being the third generation of running that restaurant, because obviously times change. Tastes in food change too, right? I mean, it used to be Kentucky Fried Chicken. They took the fried out of the chicken. I don't know if that has been an impact on you, or tell me just about maintaining a successful business over that period of time.
Well, I have not changed anything that my grandpa and dad started. With the recipes. So we make everything, and we had 64 years ago. They make everything fresh here every day. As you probably remember, the relishes that come with any dinner. We actually still make the kidney bean salad, pickle our own beets, our coleslaw, our cottage cheese, and our almighty corn fritter still made here fresh every day. The corn fritters. And then the chicken, we actually get it in whole and cut it here fresh every day.
So you've got an 1,100-seat restaurant, right? How often are you filled these days?
I would say Mother's Day, Easter, Father's Day are the three biggest.
Yeah.
Because we do have so many rooms. Since this broke, we've been pretty busy as well.
Well, listen, I'm so glad to hear that you're not going anywhere. I don't really care for that restaurant in Lakewood, Colorado. I don't care that they're closing. I'm just happy you're going to stay around.
That's right.
Laura Hastert, the owner of White Fence Farm. Thank you very much for joining us. Continued success, Laura.
Okay, thank you all.
...and retirement distribution, and then they monitor, adjust, and communicate to help you stay on track. Financial Engines will help manage fears and calm your concerns. For a free portfolio review and to find a local advisor, visit financialengines.com. Financialengines.com, their goals are aligned with yours. All right, John Williams, what's on the big program this Friday afternoon?
We will talk to a reporter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution about the big governor's race in Atlanta.
There's a lot to sort out there.
In Georgia. Yeah, no kidding. I mean, the sort of voter purging, or a lot of 47,000 names have sort of been put on temporary hiatus.
And there's federal court involved in all of that, too?
They may be able to vote, but it's complicated. So we'll talk a little bit about what's happening down there. We'll talk about school buses. Five accidents involving school buses around the country this week. We've got our bright...